Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, it is a special one we are celebrating. It is our 100th episode of the Business Day Spotlight, and it's been quite an interesting journey. Talking to various people from different industries around the economy, around business, around what it means to do business in Africa, some of the considerations for the economy, and COVID-19, the present time that we're in, has been what many have continue to say is an unprecedented time, and it's been quite a case study to see how various economies and businesses hold up during this time. Take us forward into episode 100. We're joined by Sifiso Skenjana, who is the chief economist and thought leadership executive at IQ Business, and he's going to be helping us to unpack something that actually happened the other day. In response to COVID-19, the government of South Africa has had to adjust its budget, and so we saw Finance Minister Tito Mboweni giving his supplementary budget speech recently, and there were some very dire, very negative, I don't know, we keep using these words, but there's no other way to describe the state of the economy that he was describing yesterday. So, Sifiso, greetings to you. Thank you for joining us for 100th episode.
Oh, greetings. And maybe there is a new word we can use and say that the South African economy is alive with possibilities, insofar as, of course, we will do the right things to absolutely realize those possibilities.
I love that sentiment. I think Tito Mboweni would be shaking your hand right now, if he heard you saying something like that, especially after talking about the narrow gate. I think you'd be one of the people for the narrow gate he was talking about. But I guess, from your point of view, what were your general impressions from yesterday's budget speech? I think for me, one of the big numbers that really stood out to me was the negative 7.2% contraction that is estimated for the year. We've been hearing lots of numbers on this end, but to sort of give it credence, it just seems as if this number keeps going, up, in the negative direction.
Yeah, I mean, just to start on that particular note, I think the 7.2% contraction that is expected as per National Treasury is certainly probably a little bit optimistic. We saw, I think, last night, the World Bank or IMF, I'm not quite sure, I think it was IMF, revising our growth expectations now to an 8% contraction. And again, there's continued downward risk on that number. Our baseline expectation is that the South African economy will contract by 17.9% for 2020. And those are the conversations that we certainly can get into, I think, on the tail end of this discussion. But I think as in many conversations, it is expected that the Reserve Bank and National Treasury would rather follow the market in their growth expectations guidance, primarily because if they lead the market with pretty dire numbers around what they expect, that becomes more self-fulfilling because of the impact it can have on investment plans and all of those things. And so we expect that they'll remain behind the curve in their growth expectations for the country. But I think, getting into the other salient items in the budget that were, I think, of particular interest is that we heard Minister Mboweni talk around the Herculean task that we've got to close the hippo's mouth, and in essence, really talking around us reducing, I think, our budget deficit and moving ultimately to a surplus, within the medium-term framework. But, what was key for me is, Getting into the detail around what's created the jaws effect, this hippo's mouth opening wider, and therefore what do we need to do today to ensure that we actually are doing the right things to close that hippo's jaw in this Herculean task that we've got. And the first thing is state-owned entities. So he clearly skirted around the issue. The only point he touched on was around probably alluding to, and so not even in so many direct words, around the need for South Africa to move towards a more diversified energy mix, and that the current way of looking at the energy provision in the South African context is outdated, and that was the reference to the Queen, I think, that he mentioned in the context of Eskom. Outside of that, there's certainly no conversation or no content around its implication on government's cross-exposure. We know Eskom is where South Africa, as a sovereign, has got the largest contingent liability exposure to the debt. And so, any conversation around that, where Eskom is on the journey towards reform of its capital structure, of its markets, of everything that would ultimately reduce the risk on those contingent liabilities, there was nothing there. We know that SAA is still in the process of business rescue, but again, the risk is still a live risk one can talk of. And the only state-owned entity we heard anything about was the land bank, and around the recapitalization of the land bank, with 3 billion rand. And again, I think that's in context of securing food security in the context of South Africa. But again, nothing talking there around how does land bank become truly a bank for all South Africans, because we know that I think about 91% of their book, I think at least as of about 2 years ago, was to white farmers. And so there's certainly a question that needs to be asked around how does the land bank continue operating now as a bank for all farming enterprises in South Africa, in terms of truly creating broad-based participation for particularly emerging black farmers. And outside of that, and so that's the one of the things that we certainly didn't get any texture on, and that is certainly critical in ensuring that we're able to claw back and close, I think, this jaw that we're talking about. Outside of that, we heard that debt servicing costs have moved from about 13 cents to the rand to about 21 cents to the rand, and I think that already then talks to, of course, what is known, that the more your debt servicing costs accelerate, the more it cannibalizes your service delivery. And so again, there's certain texture there around the fact that when we talk debt to GDP, we've got to understand that debt is sitting on the top part of that fraction, but on the bottom part is the GDP. And there was certainly little context around what does it mean to build capacity in the South African economy to ensure that GDP numbers actually grow sustainably in such a way then that our debt position would be palatable for the economy from a risk perspective. And the elephant that stayed in the room is the issue of public sector wages. We heard the minister wishing Mr. Mthunu the best of luck in dealing with that. And compared to his stance in the February budget to now around the public sector wage bill, I think there's certainly a lot of complexity that is built into the system, given the wave of unemployment we're already seeing, with now unemployment at 30.1%. And that's just on quarter one numbers. And so we expect that number to accelerate materially when quarter two numbers come out. And so, government then playing a role as a buffer, an employment buffer in the economy, certainly makes it a lot more complex for them to talk around the public sector wage bill. I think also what they've missed is that if businesses are able to cut the salaries of the employees without retrenching them, governments should have also, I think, explored opportunities of cutting wages, particularly in a COVID-impacted economy. And all of those then are the things that truly go into the conversation around what would it mean to close that jaw that keeps widening off this particular hippo. So the one positive that I really was energized about is certainly the continuance and the non-removal of their foot on the accelerator with respect to public spending and social spending, to be specific. I think social resilience is a key determinant of economic outcomes for any economy. And so when you continue then ensuring that those buffers are in place for people to remain resilient through the provision of this temporary conditional grant is certainly progressive. But I think also when you look at the entire picture in total, if we're expecting a revenue shortfall of 300 million over the medium term, yet our expectations for spending in infrastructure is 300 billion, I meant, and our expectation of infrastructure expenditures 100 billion over 10 years, it certainly means that our approach to leveraging infrastructure as a growth mechanism, as a counter-cyclical approach to fiscal austerity, is certainly not enough. And we certainly need to put our foot more on that to ensure that we truly realize the benefit that we could get from infrastructure as a lever for growth going into the long term for South Africa.
Now, as much as, Tito did not talk too much around the public sector wages, and at the same time didn't shed too much light on SOEs, I found it interesting that the Land Bank is the one that they singled out to mention. And for me, it sort of felt as if it was more a function of, in terms of the SOEs that need to be bailed out and all of that, it's the one that you, because 3 billion in the context of SOEs is not much when you think about the financial position of SAA, and more so when you think about the 400 billion plus that Eskom is sitting with on its own balance sheet. So, it seems like an interesting example that they picked on to actually, talk about. But on the whole, I wanted to get your thoughts around this zero-based budgeting that Tito spoke about, because it seems as if he left a lot of the detail out, but sort of sent a message to the public sector to say that, going forward, you guys are going to have to be justifying each line item. Do you think that will go some way towards addressing some of the issues that you're talking about, such as that public sector wage bill?
The zero-based budgeting approach is an interesting one, primarily in what it proposes to contribute to the context of South African economy. And one such contribution is the reduction of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And that's primarily on the back of the fact that traditional budgeting approaches is that, it's a use it or lose it type of budgeting approach. So if you don't spend your budget, you lose it. And so what would often happen closer to the financial year end is that people would accelerate to spend their budget, even on things that were not necessarily useful for their departments or for their municipalities, to ensure they don't lose the budget the next year. Now everyone needs to pitch, in essence, for all their budget items, which is, I think, is more progressive. And so people have got to think more clearly around the business case for each of the budget items. Over and above that, the oversight, which is a monthly and a quarterly oversight, on particularly the large budget expenditure items, is certainly going to, I think, add more credence to the value of the zero-based budgeting approach. And as a result, I think there's certainly opportunity for this to be quite progressive stance from a South African point of view. It won't come without resistance. We've already seen COSATU call in this political posturing and some theoretics. And there's a lot of change management that certainly needs to come into play. But again, I think You know, that's more operational stuff around getting the various finance departments in the departments themselves to get a fair around what does it mean to do this? How does this come to life in my day to day in the way I do my work? And there's probably some systems implication on the back of that. But I think that certainly wouldn't be detail that's necessarily important for the country at the budget speech itself. So I was comfortable with his posturing or his position around that particular direction.
I actually want to switch over to the opening up of the economy that's sort of like, you know, in progress. We've gone through level 5 to level 4 to level 3, and now it sort of feels like, you know, it's level 3 light. Some people call it level 3 advanced, you know, you can call it whatever you will. But how have you seen some of that progress? You know, because most of the stuff that the finance minister was talking about yesterday is a direct function of the fact that there's been so little business activity, at least in the last couple of months, especially when you just look at the loss in tax, you know, tax revenues, you know, just because people aren't employed as much, so they can't be paying income tax, which we know to be the biggest contributor to, you know, the national tax collection. At the same time, you have borrowing, which is likely to go up to fund some of the social programs that you were talking about earlier on. So going forward, how have you sort of seen this opening up, which has, you know, sort of been gradual, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess we can start just having a view around, you know, some of the opportunities that we missed. And I think the missed opportunities in the earlier lockdown levels is in things like e-commerce, when there were restrictions for certain e-commerce to not take place outside of essential services. I didn't see value in that. And, you know, it didn't contradict any of the social distancing imperatives that were currently in place. And also, I think maybe the way we should have thought about it is which sectors and what subsectors are able to operate in a COVID complying way, right? And so there are some sectors that lend themselves just by design to social distancing. And so I think that probably should have been an approach that they looked at and then accelerated the emphasis on those particular sectors, and so make those sectors even more able to operate and build capacity in those sectors, look at incentive structures to make them operate even better. So in essence, it's really redirecting economic flow to sectors that are not compromising of people's health. And so that would mean that they don't remove their foot of the health accelerator, but also start to put their foot deeper into the economic accelerator. And it seems, you know, that the lives versus livelihoods conversation did become pervasive in the sense that it seemed like it was always going to be a trade-off. And I don't think it necessarily needed to be a trade-off between, compromising people's exposure versus economic activity. Over and above that, you know, there's the challenge that also, you know, they said some sectors, you know, are open to operate at 50%. And, you know, and mining was one of those sectors, right? And you look at our mining, I think manganese is probably the one mineral that's mostly open cast in South Africa. And most of the others mean that the shafts that have been sunk. And you can't decommission 50% of a shaft. And so the business model doesn't lend itself to operating at 50%. And some restaurants have got the same challenge even now. And so when theoretically you're saying at an advanced level 3, the economy is operating at 70-75%, operationally probably operating at 45-46%, primarily because of some of the constraints that remain in place that just make it operationally unviable for businesses to open, given the, you know, the protocols and all of those things. And these are the real challenges of what we're going to see in terms of GDP numbers eventually coming out. We're expecting between 28 and 33% contraction in quarter 2 GDP, quarter on quarter. on the back of the phased out hard lockdown, as well as the demand contraction that is a result of the social distancing, as well as then some businesses just purely being unable to operate at the right capacity to be able to bring economic activity back into the marketplace.
Economic data has been a bit hard to come by, despite all of the projections that you're making and what would you expect. What have you actually been keeping an eye on that you before some of the numbers that the minister gave out on Wednesday, what were you sort of keeping up with so to gauge economic activity at the moment, given the lack of data?
Well, I mean, so the first guidance we followed was, the recommendations coming out of the economic cluster around what sectors can operate. And then you work it back in terms of how those sectors and subsectors contribute to the economy. And so you'd know that if it's operating at a particular level, these are the implications from an output, and it's then revenue and its employment implications. And so I guess that was one of the pieces of work. Stats SA has also been running some surveys that I think corroborate a lot of our findings. They also found quite similar, that at a hard stage 5 lockdown, the impact on the economy would be about a 40% implication. And so then that cascades down as you partially reopen the economy. Over and above that, there are researchers at National Treasury who are also modeling the impact on the economy at a subsector level. And so we're able, I think, to both leverage our own models as well as external models to get real texture on the data itself. Over and above that, you would see publications coming from the Automotive Association, NAMSA, where the report, for example, 98% decline in vehicle sales. And all of those things would be embedded in the data that we're following. You're looking at PMI indices. And so as much as data has been hard to come by, I think there is a sufficient amount of data in the marketplace that gives you a relative sense of the level of economic activity taking place, and therefore then being able to model some scenarios around that.
Okay. So I guess, now we ask you to look into your crystal ball. Like I said at the start, the 7.2% is a stark number to me, even though others have predicted that it could be anything between 5 and 16-17% contraction year on year by the time December rolls around. But I guess on your end, where are you sort of seeing things going, given the current trend, and also factoring in the almost 33% contraction that you guys are sort of predicting for the second quarter?
Yeah, it's quite an interesting one. Often output leads developments in the labor market. And if we saw a contraction or a loss of about 334,000 jobs as a first quarter contraction in employment, the implication that we can see from the second quarter going into the rest of the year is probably going to be significantly more dire than that. In South Africa specifically, the elasticity to output and hours worked is close to one. And that means that there's usually, particularly on the downside, a one-on-one tracking of reduction in output percentage-wise to reduction in labor. And that would suggest that on our base case of 17.9% contraction in output for the year, there would be about 2.9 million jobs at risk for the economy for 2020. And and that would drive your unemployment numbers closer to about 45%. And that's, you know, and that's really the reality we're dealing with in the South African context now, is that young people don't have opportunities to participate in the marketplace. And the older people who are active participants in the marketplace are the ones who are at most risk of falling fatally ill in the event that they contract the coronavirus. And so there's you know, a number of structural impediments, I think, to South Africa getting back onto a sustainable growth path. But I think the choices we make today certainly can inform the dividend that we can reap. I don't think that the economy is too far gone at all. I think there's real opportunities in the marketplace now to build capacity, given the extent of deglobalization that's been accelerated by COVID, and therefore countries now are looking at building internal or domestic capacity. And so given, I'll make an example and say, textiles industry, one of the reasons that it went to the doldrums in South Africa is because of its inability to compete at a price, on a price point, given, we didn't have the right level of scale. And as a result, when we became a signatory to the World Trade Organization and had to remove our tariffs down from 70% to 10%, or about 15%, that made the import intensity for textiles to accelerate materially faster. Now we've got an opportunity to build scale in terms of our textiles. You know, should we be thinking about building the largest industrial park for everyone who makes clothes to go work there? These are some of the things that could, you know, be the right policy choices, or the right, at least, choices to inform the kind of growth that will enable us to operate sustainably when the global economy goes back to, or goes to, a new normal. And so these are some of the things that I think inform my optimism about South Africa and opportunities. I think, however, that is premised on our ability to make the right choices today.
So that was us with Sifiso Skenjana, who is the Chief Economist and Thought Leadership Executive at IQ Business. He is striking an optimistic note at the end. They're just saying that there is an opportunity for South Africa to sort of remodel its entire economy away from some of the traditional constraints that have held the country back, and perhaps rethinking some of these issues. He spoke about textiles at the end there, about how, you know, there is an opportunity and how people can, you know, perhaps reconfigure and actually use that as an engine of growth. But all of it will be premised on the country's ability to actually make the right policy decisions. We were just going around the beginning of the conversation, just around the finance minister's supplementary budget speech, just noting some of the statistics and the picture being painted. 7.2% contraction in the economy predicted, budget deficit sitting at 760 billion rand by the end of the year. That's where it's being predicted. 300 billion rand in terms of lost tax income, and national debt at about 82% of GDP. And Sifiso also just mentioning the fact that with employment currently at 30.1%, even before COVID, then it's likely that, you know, it might even touch, you know, even bigger numbers. Some people saying 35%, so others 40%. So it's a tough picture that the economy is presenting. But he's saying that there is opportunity for South Africa to get out of this actually stronger than the way that we did. Sifiso, for those that want to engage with you outside of this platform, how can they perhaps get in touch with you?
I am available on LinkedIn, Sifiso Skenjana, and also available on Twitter, it's Sifiso_Skenjana.
This is Mudiwa's Tech.
Quite a sort of a dire state of affairs that's being described by Finance Minister Tito Mboweni this Wednesday, talking about the state of the economy and the need to actually redirect funds in the budget. I think one of the things that really struck me was, I guess, some of the movements in the actual budget and the shortfalls that are actually being predicted, particularly the budget deficit, which actually grew which is actually set to grow, to about 16% from 6.8% as predicted when the budget was initially made in February, which actually just shows concretely on the ground what COVID-19 has actually meant for the South African economy. One of the other things that also struck me is that there wasn't a lot of detail that was given around what's actually going on in terms of redirecting the funds, apportioning the funds, because from the 500 billion rand stimulus, we knew that part of it is going to be borrowed and the other part is going to be redirected expenditure. And the only concrete example that I was able to really find was the difference between national, provincial, local governments, because you saw that there was an increase in the national budget by 32 billion rand, a decrease in provincial budgets by 4 billion rand, and an increase in local government budgets by 11 billion rand because of the response to COVID-19. The other one is just the amounts on healthcare spending and unemployment benefits, but more than anything else, it's just concretely showing us what the COVID-19 has actually done on the economy. But moving forward, one of the things that I think will be good to see going forward is how the zero-based budgeting actually works, because it's going to force a lot of government departments, if it's done correctly, it's going to force a lot of government's departments to actually justify why they spend money on the things that they do. Yes, it's a tedious process, but it's something that's probably needed to get South Africa out of the mess that it is in right now. Okay, so that's been it for this 100th episode of the Business Day Spotlight. Thank you to everyone who was listening. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.